So imagine for a second, for the last 20 years, you've used this one specific app as your like absolute baseline for geographic truth.
Right, the gold standard.
Yeah, exactly. You type in an address and you expect to see objective reality, you know, the actual cars in your driveway, the true shape of a coastline, the real unvarnished reality on the ground.
Which we all just took for granted, honestly.
Totally. But what happens when that ultimate verification engine is just quietly updated overnight to become basically the world's most powerful deepfake factory?
It's terrifying, really.
It is. And that's exactly what happened. On July 30, 2026, Google basically handed the internet a sledgehammer to smash objective reality. And things got so bad they had to hit the panic button just 31 hours later.
Yeah, and the fallout we saw in that tiny window of time, I mean, it's going to be studied for decades. It fundamentally altered the bedrock of digital verification.
Right. And that is the core of our mission for today's deep dive. We're unpacking this massive, exhaustive report from The Atlantic. It was published on July 31st, 2026, and it's called When Google Earth Became a Deepfake Factory.
A very fitting title.
Very fitting. So we're going to explore how a single feature update dismantled two decades of hard-earned credibility, the underlying mechanisms that made these fakes so completely undetectable, and what this paradigm shift means for, well, your ability to trust literally anything you see online going forward.
Because that trust is gone now.
Exactly. But let's start with the timeline, just to give you a sense of the sheer velocity of this disaster. So at exactly 10:00 a.m. Pacific time on a Thursday, Google casually drops a blog post.
Like it's no big deal.
Right, just a standard update announcing they had integrated their new generative model, Nano Banana 2, directly into the web version of Google Earth.
And then chaos.
Utter chaos. 31 hours later, at 5:36 p.m. on Friday, the feature was completely pulled offline following a global outcry.
Well, what's fascinating here is this wasn't just another buggy chatbot launch, you know? It wasn't an AI giving someone a weird pizza recipe.
Right, like putting glue on your pizza.
Exactly. This was a direct attack, well, an unintentional compromise, but a compromise nonetheless of digital critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because Google Earth isn't just a map for weekend road trips anymore.
No, not at all.
It is the baseline of spatial truth for human rights researchers, investigative journalists, defense analysts worldwide. When you inject unverified synthetic generation into that specific environment, you are actively destabilizing how global society agrees on what is real.
Yeah, so I mean, to understand how they managed to break something so fundamental, we really need to look under the hood of the tech itself. Because Nano Banana 2, it wasn't functioning like the standard AI art generators we're all used to by now.
Right, it wasn't a standard text-to-image thing.
Exactly. It's a Gemini-powered model specializing in a process called image-to-image transformation.
And that distinction, the difference between text-to-image and image-to-image, is really the mechanical core of this whole crisis.
How so?
Well, think about the early versions of Midjourney or DALL-E, right? They operate on text-to-image logic. So the AI starts with a matrix of static noise, essentially a blank canvas, and attempts to arrange pixels from scratch based on whatever text prompt you give it.
Like, draw a cat on a skateboard.
Exactly. It's making it out of thin air. But an image-to-image model takes a highly detailed, authentic photograph as its absolute foundation.
Okay.
It then surgically alters only specific visual contents while rigorously calculating and preserving all the surrounding structural data from the original image.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Okay.
So, unlike text-to-image generators that paint on a blank canvas, this was like it's like handing someone a hyper-intelligent Photoshop filter that uses actual physical reality as its base layer, like real roads, real buildings, real topography. That's all staying put.
Exactly, because under the hood, Google Earth isn't just a flat JPEG image that you're looking at.
Right, it's a globe.
It's a complex three-dimensional mesh. It contains true elevation data, it has LiDAR scans of building geometry, and this is crucial, it has metadata about the exact trajectory and angle of the sun at the precise millisecond the satellite captured that specific image.
Oh, wow. So it knows exactly where the light is coming from.
Precisely. So when a user prompted Nano Banana 2 to add something to the map, the AI wasn't just dropping in flat 2D pixels. It was virtually erecting a 3D object into that specific data environment.
That's wild.
And it forced the generated object to obey the real-world physics of the scene.
You know, the intended use case for this, it actually makes sense if you look at it purely from like an architectural standpoint.
For sure, the pitch was great.
Yeah, Google pitched this as a revolutionary tool for urban planners. The logic was that a city planner could look at a barren concrete intersection on Google Earth, type in a prompt like add a green urban park with mature oak trees, and just instantly visualize how a new construction project would interact with the real world.
And as a controlled enterprise tool, it is brilliant. It really is. But the catastrophic oversight here was deploying it to the general public with zero content
It
restrictions.
was zero.
None at all.
Right.
Because the exact same algorithmic process designed to calculate the shadow of an oak tree across a city block, well, it could just as easily be used to calculate the shadow of a smoking crater,
Oh,
or
man.
collapsed infrastructure, or a mobilized artillery unit. And because the AI anchored its generation to real-world geographic features, the fabricated elements just blended in completely seamlessly.
It inherited all that ambient light.
Exactly. It inherited the authentic ambient light, so it didn't look like weird, glossy AI art. It looked like a genuine high-resolution satellite pass.
And that theoretical danger, it translated into real-world chaos at just an unprecedented speed. I mean, it didn't take weeks for adversarial groups to reverse engineer this tool. It took mere hours.
Barely even a morning.
Yeah, less than 12 hours after that 10 a.m. launch, fabricated satellite imagery was just flooding X, LinkedIn, Reddit, Telegram, everywhere.
Because the barrier to entry for geopolitical forgery just dropped to absolute zero.
Right.
Think about it. Before this update, if a hostile actor wanted to forge a satellite image of a military strike to fool defense analysts, it required days of painstaking work.
By experts, right.
Yeah, by elite digital forensics teams, manually calculating sun angles and scale and lens distortion. But this tool, it just automated that elite forgery for everyone.
The source material highlights this truly chilling example from Elliot Higgins. He's the founder of Bellingcat, you know, one of the premier open source intelligence organizations.
They do incredible work.
They really do. So he accessed the tool on day one to stress test it, and he generated a photorealistic satellite image of a devastating drone strike on the center of Moscow.
It was flawless.
Completely authentic looking, and his quote in the Atlantic piece, it just sums up the terror of the moment perfectly. He said, "It took me exactly 4 seconds to generate."
4 seconds to manufacture evidence that could theoretically trigger a diplomatic
It's
crisis.
a crash of financial market.
Easily, in 4 seconds.
And the sheer volume of scenarios generated in that 31-hour window was just staggering. I want to list some of the specific fakes highlighted in the Atlantic report. And by the way, I want to be incredibly clear to you listening right now. We are impartially reporting the contents of the source material here.
Right, it's important to note we aren't taking any political stands.
Exactly. We are not taking any political stance. But sharing these examples is essential to illustrate how this tool was immediately weaponized across literally every conceivable ideological spectrum.
It was free for all.
It really was. Users generated a recreated 9/11 with a commercial airliner striking the new One World Trade Center.
It is horrific.
Yeah. They generated leveled hospitals in Gaza and decimated nuclear enrichment facilities in Iran. But it wasn't just international conflict.
No, the domestic stuff was crazy too.
Very hypercharged domestic scenarios, like
Yang.
massive homeless encampments sprawling across the White House lawn,
Right.
violent riots and fires at Mar-a-Lago, and fabricated images of thousands of immigrants breaching the U.S.-Mexico border.
It became a real-time engine for bespoke disinformation.
Bespoke disinformation, yeah.
Right, because whatever narrative a bad actor wanted to push, whatever societal fear they wanted to exploit, left, right, whatever, they suddenly had access to photorealistic, authoritative proof to legitimize their claims.
But wait, I have to challenge the idea that these fakes were entirely flawless, though. I mean, even if the AI borrows the real shadow and the real lighting from the environment, it still has to generate the actual object,
The
right?
pixels of the tank or the crater, yeah.
Right, the tank or the crowd. Don't those generated objects still possess the classic visual artifacts of AI? Like we've all seen the melted textures or the bizarre geometry or objects blending weirdly into nearby cars. Shouldn't a trained eye catch that?
You'd think so, yes. Under standard conditions, visual artifacts are the dead giveaway.
Right.
But a disinformation researcher from the Federation of American Scientists explained in the report why this specific implementation completely bypassed those visual red flags.
How did it bypass them?
Mano Banana 2 utilized a strict geometric masking technique. It confined its generation to a rigidly defined boundary and forced the generated pixels to downsample.
Down
Ansicherung.
Yeah, force the new pixels to degrade and match the exact resolution and grain of the authentic satellite pass.
Oh, wow. So it made itself look worse on purpose.
Exactly. It wasn't trying to draw a high-definition perfect tank. Mm-hmm. It was generating the blurry, top-down suggestion of a tank, perfectly degraded to match a camera floating in low Earth orbit.
That is so clever, but so bad.
It is, because our brains and our detection algorithms, they're trained to look for high-definition anomalies, mm-hmm. extra fingers, weird smooth textures.
Yeah, exactly.
But by purposefully degrading the synthetic edition to match the noisy, grainy reality of satellite photography, it became virtually invisible to the naked eye.
Okay, so if visual detection is basically rendered useless because the AI perfectly masks its own tracks, that forces us to rely entirely on metadata, right?
Sure.
Or invisible digital signatures to prove an image is fake. So did Google have a digital failsafe in place for this?
Well, they did, and they leaned heavily on it in their initial PR defense, actually.
Right.
They embedded every image generated by Nano Banana 2 with a digital watermark called Synthid.
Right, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and they assured the public that this invisible pixel pattern would survive resizing, it would survive compression, and it would act as this undeniable cryptographic stamp proving an image was synthetic.
But wait. If you are a bad actor trying to spread disinformation, you aren't going to share the original pristine file.
Of course not.
You're going to hold up a physical smartphone to a glowing computer screen and just take a picture of the monitor.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're introducing screen glare, the physical moiré effect from the monitor's pixel grid, plus whatever aggressive compression the phone's native camera app uses. Isn't that like putting a high-tech security tag on a shirt, but the alarm won't go off if the thief just takes a Polaroid of it? There is no way a delicate digital watermark survives that translation.
You have just perfectly defined the analog loophole. And it is exactly how Synthid was instantly defeated.
Seriously, just taking a picture of the screen.
Just taking a picture. The source details a test conducted by reporters at Ars Technica on the literal day of the launch. They generated a fake on Google Earth, left it open on their desktop monitor, snapped a photograph of the screen with a standard smartphone, and uploaded that photograph to Gemini to verify the watermark.
And the watermark was shattered into unreadable noise, right?
Completely destroyed. Gemini analyzed the photo and confidently declared the image was an authentic photograph.
Wow.
Yeah. This exposes the devastating flaw in Silicon Valley's approach to safety. They engineered a defense based on the assumption that bad actors transmit clean, original files.
Which they never do.
Never. The reality is that disinformation travels through screenshots. It gets pumped through messaging apps like Telegram and WhatsApp.
And those apps apply brutal compression algorithms specifically to strip out metadata and save bandwidth.
Exactly. The analog loophole rendered Google's ultimate security measure completely impotent.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the failure of that watermark represents the loss of a massive cultural asset. Because since 2005, Google Earth hasn't just been a commercial product, you know.
I know, it's a utility.
It has functioned as a critical trust anchor for the global community. Open source intelligence reporters rely on it to independently verify military strikes on civilian areas.
Right.
Human rights organizations use the historical slider tool to locate mass graves in conflict zones by comparing before and after topography.
It's vital work.
So by integrating an unrestricted generative model, Google took this vital reality verification tool and just contaminated the well.
And once the well is contaminated, the trust doesn't just bounce back when you turn the feature off. The lingering doubt remains forever.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because you'd think a disaster of this magnitude was a one-off mistake.
Right, a tragic oversight.
Yeah, a tragic oversight by a company that just got too excited about a new toy. But the Atlantic article meticulously maps out how this is actually part of a deeply ingrained systemic pattern of recklessness across the entire industry.
It really is a pattern.
Just look at the timeline of Google's recent AI failures. In 2024, their Gemini image generator produced pictures of racially diverse Nazis while refusing to show historically accurate soldiers.
Well, that was a mess.
Then that same year, their AI overviews and search confidently suggested users should eat rocks for their health.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And in 2025, their virtual try-on shopping tool was exploited within days to map explicit imagery onto photos of minors.
Disgusting.
And this behavior isn't even isolated to Google. Elon Musk's Grok AI generated millions of explicit, unwatermarked images in its first few days before any guardrails were added.
Right.
OpenAI has repeatedly faced massive vulnerabilities with unauthorized voice cloning. I mean, why does this keep happening? Are these trillion-dollar companies just incompetent?
Well, it points to a profound industry-wide decay of safety culture.
It's a bizarre paradox, right? You have trillion-dollar companies employing the absolute brightest engineers on the planet, yet they repeatedly fail at basic red teaming. This can't be an intellect issue. It has to be structural. What is breaking down inside the boardrooms of these companies before launch day?
It is entirely structural. It's driven by the mathematics of the first mover advantage.
Okay, explain that.
It is the classic prisoner's dilemma applied to Silicon Valley economics. Right now, the market dictates that whoever deploys a new AI capability first captures the media narrative. They absorb the early user base, and they see the immediate stock bump.
Right, line goes up.
Exactly. So if you delay a launch by 6 months to conduct rigorous adversarial red teaming, your competitor will simply launch their slightly broken version tomorrow and steal all your market share.
So the economic incentive is actively rewarding negligence.
Precisely, because the financial calculus is skewed. There are virtually zero tangible penalties for releasing unsafe AI.
It's cheaper to just break things.
It is literally cheaper for these corporations to launch a broken, dangerous product, utilize the global public as unpaid beta testers, wait to see what catches fire, and then issue reactive patches.
Yeah, they know they can weather a 48-hour PR storm.
Exactly. Mm. They post an apologetic blog post, promise to implement stronger guardrails, and just move on with all the massive user data they harvested during the chaos.
But that brings up a massive legal gray area, though. How are they dodging the liability when a fake image of a bombed hospital causes a real-world panic? This isn't the bulletin board era of the 1990s where a platform can just point to Section 230 and say, hey, we're just the billboard. We aren't responsible for what a user posts.
Right, because with generative AI, Google isn't just the billboard anymore.
No. They provided the paint, they provided the brush, and the algorithm itself basically painted half the canvas based on a user's prompt.
And the source material addresses this exact legal vacuum. You're entirely correct that the nature of content creation has fundamentally changed.
Yeah.
But the legal framework has not caught up at all. Tech companies are aggressively using Section 230 to shield themselves from liability regarding generative outputs.
How do they justify that?
They argue that the AI is simply a neutral tool, and the liability rests solely with the anonymous user who typed the malicious prompt.
That is so frustrating.
It is. Because the legal system moves at a glacial pace compared to software development, we're trapped in this massive accountability gap.
Right.
A company can build a deepfake factory, a user can weaponize it, the damage can spread globally, and absolutely nobody is held legally responsible.
The fact that nobody goes to jail for this is incredibly frustrating. But to play devil's advocate for a moment here, the feature was pulled, right?
It was.
Google initiated a complete rollback 31 hours in. The immediate crisis was averted. The tool is offline. So can't we just take a breath and consider this a narrowly avoided disaster?
I wish we could, but no. This raises an important question about the long-term geopolitical fallout. The specific feature on Google Earth may be gone, but the proof of concept has been irreversibly validated.
The cat is out of the bag.
Exactly. The Atlantic report emphasizes that nation-state actors, specifically intelligence agencies in Russia, China, and North Korea, they watched this 31-hour window very, very closely.
Oh, man.
They now know for an absolute fact that hyper-realistic, geographically anchored image-to-image generation works perfectly.
And they don't need to wait for Google to turn it back on. I mean, they have the sovereign wealth and the server farms to build their own private versions of Nano Banana 2 behind closed doors.
They are undoubtedly building them right now. And they won't voluntarily roll theirs back when they launch.
No, they won't.
The geopolitical threat this creates is paralyzing. A nation state can now generate flawless satellite evidence for a false flight operation and use it to justify a military invasion to the United Nations.
Or fabricate imagery of enemy troop mobilizations to manipulate international defense spending.
Exactly. But the inverse is equally terrifying, and it's what researchers call the rise of the liar's dividend.
Okay, what does that mean in this context? The liar's dividend.
The liar's dividend is the advantage gained by bad actors when the public loses faith in reality. So if a government commits a terrible atrocity, say, bombing a civilian center, and an independent human rights group publishes authentic satellite imagery of the mass graves,
the offending government can just shrug and say, that's just an AI fake.
Exactly. They say, you saw what happened with Google Earth. You can't trust satellite images anymore. The mere existence of this technology provides permanent, plausible deniability for war crimes.
Wow.
They can use the shadow of AI to dismiss authentic humanitarian crises or trigger financial market crashes by claiming real evidence is synthetic.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, who is sitting here listening to this right now? If the genie is permanently out of the bottle and state-sponsored groups are currently building their own reality-altering tools, how do you adapt? What are the new rules of engagement for verification in the digital age?
Well, the foundational rule of the new digital age is that single-source reliance is dead.
It's over.
Completely over. The era where you could look at one satellite image or one piece of digital evidence and accept it as absolute, unquestionable truth is done. The security researchers cited in the source material map out a new mandatory workflow, and we have to pivot entirely to multi-source verification.
But if Google Earth is compromised in the public's mind, what are the actual reliable alternatives?
The report highlights several critical, specialized alternatives that have specifically refused to integrate generative AI into their pipelines.
Okay, that's good. Like what?
There is Copernicus Sentinel 2 from the European Space Agency, which provides highly reliable, real-time environmental imagery.
All right.
There are commercial providers like Maxar Technologies and Airbus, whose high-resolution imagery is heavily utilized by rigorous media outlets.
Right, you always see their watermarks on the news.
Exactly. There is Planet Labs, which operates a massive constellation of microsatellites for daily Earth coverage. And there is NASA WorldView for untampered historical archives.
So you have to cross-reference everything.
Yes. To survive this informational era, users, and especially journalists, have to demand this multi-source verification. If you see an image of a destroyed building trending on social media, you must check Copernicus. You cross-reference with Maxar.
You demand access to the original uncompressed file metadata.
And, most importantly, you require ground-level corroboration, actual verified video footage or eyewitness reports from the physical location before you accept a top-down satellite pass as reality.
It is an exhausting workflow, I'm not going to lie.
It is exhausting, but it's the only way forward.
Yeah. As we wrap up this deep dive, it's vital to look at what Google actually should have done, according to the security experts interviewed in the Atlantic piece, because they didn't have to fly blind into a mountain here.
No, there were so many obvious off-ramps they could have taken.
Right. They could have strictly limited access to this tool, locking it behind verified professional accounts requiring architectural or engineering licenses.
Which would have solved the problem entirely.
Or they could have run a rigorous closed beta test for 6 months alongside independent digital security researchers to actively red team the vulnerabilities.
But that would have delayed their launch.
Exactly. Or at the very bare minimum, if they insisted on a public launch, they could have applied a highly visible, unremovable AI-generated label right across the center of the image, physically integrated into the pixels.
Instead of relying on a fragile, invisible watermark that gets destroyed by a simple screenshot?
Yep. They bypassed every single logical safeguard in the name of speed and market dominance. And that leaves us confronting a deeply unsettling reality. We have, without a doubt, crossed a technological point of no return.
We really have. The capability to deceive has now permanently outpaced our ability to detect deception on a casual, everyday level.
The gap between the weapon and the shield is just wider than ever.
It is. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you navigate your feeds today. If we are truly entering a permanent era where seeing is no longer believing, how do we prevent our society from collapsing into a state of total paralyzing paranoia?
That's a scary thought.
If every piece of digital evidence can be faked in 4 seconds, how do we ensure that real, vital evidence of suffering and atrocities isn't simply dismissed by an exhausted world as just another AI fake? When the objective, reliable X-ray machine of reality is broken, how do we learn to trust the diagnosis again?
Man, that might just be the defining question of our generation. It's a heavy concept to wrestle with, but understanding the mechanisms behind the deception, knowing exactly how the trick is done, is really the very first step in fighting back against it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, critically evaluate your sources, and always verify what you see. Catch you next time.